It's now time to think outside the box of what we've always known.
I myself will tend my sheep and have them lie down, declares the sovereign Lord.
I think that's a profound turning point in somebody's relationship with God.
And our hope in starting this was that this would become an ever-expanding conversation.
Just two real guys talking about life. That's a nice tagline.
Well, I'm Wayne Jacobson.
And I'm Brad Cummings.
And welcome to another edition of The God Journey. Truth in packaging laws, we're time warping again because of some travel coming up, so...
And I totally missed something last week.
Well, it still hasn't happened yet, so you're good.
It was the eve of the eve. Yeah, that's why.
11:30, it's what?
12:30.
Oh, excuse me, 12:30.
That's my kid's birthday. Happy birthday, Jared.
The oldest.
Oldest.
He's turning?
17. I just had a shocked look on my face going like...
I know, you should have been here. It was a moment, he goes, I should wish my son a happy birthday. And I'm going, dude, how old is he? And he's like... You couldn't even say it. I'm going, he's got to be like 17.
17. It's whoa. I mean, 60 was a big deal, but 17, yeah. Like, oh my gosh.
Yeah, wait till they turn 31 and 32.
Getting ready to launch.
Yeah, he is.
He's gonna fly good.
He's half launched now, actually, probably.
Yeah, he's going
to. He's going to fly well?
He's going to fly well. I am so thrilled with what God is doing in my kids and just watching them grow up. And they're all different. And they grow in different ways, but it's been a blast to just go like, man, Lord, you're really engaging each and every one of them in ways that matter.
Isn't that cool?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, Sunday school, that's nice. Yeah. But just to see that that's transacting and they're having their own relationship.
Yeah.
They're sorting that out. And it's like, it's wonderful to be able to speak into that.
Yeah.
It's fantastic for it to not hinge on me.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I know I laid a foundation,
yeah.
But I think I'm experiencing the joy of liftoff.
Good.
Of where you see it.
I hope it's joy.
I was
with someone recently. They were actually lamenting the fact that their, I think it was daughter, was getting ready to go off to college. And it was like, I'm not sure she's ready yet. I'm not sure this. And I just looked at them and said, man, you don't know what you're about to experience. I said, why? I said, we cried our eyes out when we left our daughter at college the first time. We just cried our eyes out. First time away from the home, she's going to live alone, blah, blah, blah. She comes back in 6 or 4 months for Christmas time, and then over the summer, the next time, completely changed. In a wonderful, I mean, just matured in the sense of now facing life on my own, making choices, make decisions. And what happens to a kid when you become a best friend of an adult child of yours? There's just this. That's great space. I mean, I love little kids. I love playing. I watch them growing up. I loved all that. I love being friends to my adult children. And when they launch, when they actually get 4, 5, 6, 8 months under their belt, where they're actually living responsible for their own life and making choices and doing things, it changes them in an amazing way. They become little humans, adult things, and
little humans.
Well, big humans, big humans. It's great. I was so excited. I'm glad you're excited. You're like, I see my dog to call you. You never see my kids. Never gonna be the same. No, it's all good.
It's like, all good. This is what all the work is for.
That's right.
This is to launch them, to let them fly. And I think what I'm so excited about seeing is just going, you know, I am so aware I'm not in control of what goes on in their life.
Yeah.
You know, when they're younger, I'm playing protective Papa Bear and trying to make sure, you know, don't hurt my kid. You know, I mean,
and no bad influences come their way.
Oh yeah. And then it's like, you know what? I have zero capacity to really control that. I can be there, but the more you try to control, I think the less it works, because then you have a little resented Nemo inside that's going like, stop it.
Wow.
And they don't know how, they don't have confidence to live life. But when you sort of release this in doses where you're just going like, you know what? I am here. I am here to help. I'm here to come alongside, but you got the jersey on and the ball was thrown to you. And it is what's up to you. It is between you and God how to sort this out.
Absolutely.
And I'm here to help, but I can't do it for you. When you see that all of a sudden there's that real life and that real sorting it out and discernment and growing in that and, you know, able to sort of fail, hit the wall and figure that out, you're just going like, okay, all this is good. All of this is good.
Yeah.
This is... This is what gives them real legs to walk on. And I'm loving that. What is a shock to me is I just don't feel like I have a 17, in terms of...
How'd I get a 17-year-old?
I'm sorry, it's like, what happened? All of a sudden woke up, whoa.
17.
It's kind of strange.
No. It's the best. I remember when Julie got married and all the jokes about, your daughter's going to get married now and your life's over. And it's just all the, you're supposed to protect your daughter and beat up her protective husband and all that kind of stuff. I went, I hope Sarah's parents weren't that way. I remember when Sarah and I graduated college together, we drove up to Ohio. 6 days later, we got married. And then we drove out to California together for our honeymoon. And I remember how exciting that whole adventure was. Life was finally starting. Not that I didn't have a great childhood. I had a great childhood. It was great fun. But this is what we were born for, to go on this journey, to find our way in the world. And Sarah and I, to build a home and to build a family and to build a life together. And I was excited for my daughter that she was starting that adventure. I wasn't like, oh, crud, now she's going to get married and her life's all going to be ruined. And it's like, no, now you get the adventure that I have shared for 36 years plus with Sarah and absolutely love to this day, love the journey we're on. And it's not that life wasn't great before, but now to be in that place of building a family, making a decision, and watch my daughter and my son-in-law do that together and their kids. And it's just fun to see that. Of course, it helps that, daughter marries someone you love and respect. That really helps. Understand.
You think that helps?
I'm thinking it helps a little bit.
Yeah, I bet that does help. Well, I think that's why Paul talked about church in the context of a family and a body.
Yeah.
And I think, if we don't understand that, then we're, as leaders, we're never excited when they launch.
No.
We're terrified. They've left us. It's boo-hoo. Oh.
Yeah, and if we've made them dependent on us, we're really going to worry about if they're going to tank now. Yeah, and I think that's a real fear, because I think a lot of parents protect, own, lead their kids right up until they're 18. They've done everything for them.
And then you get them at college, and they go nuts.
And I've seen those kids, and they really do. And you ought to be scared, because you need to start at 13, 14, 15, letting your kids find their way and making mistakes, and you loving them, not protecting them through everything. Because the kids that didn't get that when they're 18,
they lose their full minds.
They're like that missile that's been on the launch pad with the rockets going for 35 days, and finally, boom, it's just gone. You can't find it. But, God finds those kids too. Fortunately, he does. So have you heard of the spiral of silence?
No, I have not.
Man, this is some stuff by some researchers. I just read about it a couple of months ago. I thought, man, is this ever true? And it's we'll include some links at the bottom of the podcast. You can read
the spiral of silence.
The spiral of silence, inspired by Hans Christian Andersen's The Emperor's New Clothes. That caught my eye immediately, because the first book, The Naked Church, was all about The Emperor's New Clothes. The researchers, let's give them their names here, Rob Willer and Ko Kuwabara and Michael Macy. I don't know any of them, devised a set of ingenious experiments that showed how distressingly easy it is to make people go against what they believe to be true. Now, see, we think people really do what
distressingly
they do.
Easy?
Distressingly easy. One of the experiments involved wine tasting, in which participants evaluate both the wine and one another's wine tasting skills. The participants were given three samples of wine. In reality, all three samples were from the same bottle. Only one had been tainted with vinegar. Before they delivered their evaluation, they listened to other participants who were plants, who praised the vinegar-laced wine as the best. Half of the participants went against their own taste buds and joined in praising the vinegary concoction. That's amazing.
Wow.
They said even more what happens next. Another participant, who was also a plant, told the truth about the wines. But when it came time for the participants to evaluate each other, some of them were permitted to do so confidentially, and the others had to do it publicly. The ones who gave their evaluations confidentially praised the one who was telling the truth. But those who had to evaluate the truth teller publicly actually turned on him and gave him low marks.
Oh, wow.
I thought when I read that, I thought
that's kind of telling.
My dad, one time, we were attending a fellowship, and the pastor was getting incredibly long and incredibly boring on Sunday mornings, and people were just like, "Oh, we can't keep taking this." And so a bunch of them came to my dad, board members, and said, "You know, we need to talk to the pastor about this. He needs to just cut back a little bit. It's getting way too long. People are complaining." And so they go into a board meeting, and my dad said, "Okay." So he said, "You know, a few of us have been talking, and just feel like some of the sermons are getting a little bit long, a little bit boring." And the pastor just looked at him and said, "What are you talking about? Any of you feel this way?" And he said, everyone in the room bailed on him. So, "What are you talking about, Gene? We never said anything like that." Man, if you've ever been in that kind of a moment, you know exactly what these guys are talking about. The spiral of science. Researchers call this phenomenon false enforcement, which they define as the public enforcement of a norm that is not privately endorsed. What sustains the norm isn't its popularity, much less its validity, but instead the desire to avoid a negative social judgment on one's peers. According to the report, important words, and the desire to avoid a negative social judgment feeds what German sociologist Elizabeth Newell Newman called the spiral of silence. Simply stated, out of a desire to avoid reprisal or isolation, people go along with what they think is the popular opinion, even if they object to that opinion personally. And instead of voicing their objections, they will remain silent. Rather be liked than live in the truth. And I thought about the end of our podcast last week, we were talking about when my illusions are imploding and how uncomfortable it feels, and the truth is coming at us in a way that, and people wrestle with it. I know this is going to make me unpopular. I know what I see now. I'm not, you know, bought stock, lock, and whatever, the whole religion. There it is, lock, stock, and barrel. There it is. Man, I lost that. Senior moment. Yeah, I appreciate it. Then my family's going to look down on me. My friends are going to reject me. I'm not, and that really causes people to fall this false. I don't really support what's going on here, but popularity and not having, and not even popularity, it's having a negative social judgment against you.
So is the root of all of that this desperate need for acceptance?
Yeah, I think that's what it is.
Because it's like, you know, if that doesn't get satisfied by God, oh, you're in danger.
Yeah.
Of being captured by a whole bunch of other stuff.
Here's some of the tenets I got on the spiral of silence. It does exactly what it's saying. People have a fear of being rejected by those in their social environment. It's called the fear of isolation. Great term. I love the way you do it. It's called that. Really? Why don't we call it the fear of ducks? Because we could call it something. You call it something.
Lemmingitis.
People fear being rejected from their social environment. So your social environment, however, whatever you connected with your group of friends or whatever,
right,
they become a control. If you fear crossing them isolates you, you're not going to do it. People are constantly observing the behaviors of those around them and seeing which gain approval and disapproval from society. I wonder if Facebook takes this to a whole new level. Somebody puts a thought on, and then if somebody attacks it, and then somebody else attacks it, and then it's kind of popular to attack it, and then other people try to defend it, and then you find people...
It's not good.
Well, you find people want to post stuff that other people love. So then you end up posting stuff. So people go, "Ooh, that's a great thought. Ooh, that's a brilliant this. Ooh, that's a brilliant that." And I wonder if these social media things somehow make this worse. Because it makes your social environment so much larger, for one thing.
And forever permanent. And like I said.
Well, I don't think so with Facebook. I mean, it's on there forever, but whoever goes back 3 days on Facebook and reads anything, they just don't.
Employers.
Well, there you go. Now, there's a thought.
There's a thought.
Might consider that one. People unconsciously issue their own threats of isolation by showing signs of approval or disapproval. So that our showing it, I approve, disapprove, is our way of actually controlling other people, threatening to isolate them. Threats
really?
Of I, yeah. I think that happens is what they're saying. You think it's intentional? I don't know if the intent is there.
Yeah.
Because it says people unconsciously issue. So they're not conscious of it. But you say, ooh, yeah, I really like that. We say, hey, well, you're in. And then, oh, my gosh, that's just so stupid. Then you're out.
do know a few people that sort of voice those sort of as preemptive shapers of the room.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I'm thinking, and you can just tell. It's like some people. It's like they desperately need everyone else to agree with this. It's almost like they go out ahead and sort of make sure that that's the predominant feel of, you know, go against this, and most people don't want to.
Yeah, and most people who like going against what everybody else thinks in the room, they usually got their own kind of disappointment, don't they? I yes. like to be hated.
Yes.
It's my deal. I can tell when they post on my blog. They know everyone here disagrees with them, and they're wanting a fight for a fight.
You know, I think the biggest challenge, I mean, I don't know about you, but it's like, I just shouldn't have reality, positive or negative, because guess what? That is what you're dealing with. Whether you like it or not, that is what you're dealing with. I would just soon know what reality is, good or bad, and then you can deal with it. Because if you end up faking yourself out or faking someone else out or they do that to you, the reality is that whole house of cards is going to fall down.
Yeah.
There's no way to build on it. You can't build on something other than what is without some serious repercussions down the line.
Yeah, but you don't know what is if people around you, if you're the one saying, this wine tastes like vinegar, and everyone else thinking, it sure does, but that's not the prevailing opinion.
I know that. That is so hard when you're trying to be honest with what you're seeing.
Yeah.
And then the whole litmus test of everyone else is, no. And especially if they can pull that off as if they're being honest. When, in fact, they're not. They're not being true to what they're
doing. Yeah, and it's not a conscious decision to betray you. It's, I feel like if I say, yeah, I'm going to get marginalized in a room I don't want to get marginalized in. That's the fear.
Yeah, I mean, I don't have a scientific survey to back this up. This is just life
according to Brad. That's never held us back before.
Yeah, I know, but this is life according to Brad.
Okay.
You know Tootsie Pops?
Who?
Tootsie Pops?
Yeah, love them.
Hard, crunchy outside.
A chocolate center.
Soft, chewy inside.
Oh, yeah, baby.
I think human beings are like that.
Hard on the outside, soft and chewy on the inside.
I think the real wonderful stuff inside them, in their spirit, it's in there. But somehow you've got to help them get past that hard exterior and get to the place where they feel safe and secure enough to let that out. And I think if you give someone a wonderful dose of just security, where they know they're okay, it's like if
you can even disagree with me and be okay.
Yes, if they know they're okay, then I think you'll get the honest, wonderful goodness on the inside, and it won't be performing for you. I think.
So you don't have to crack off the hard candy shell with a hammer.
No, I mean, if you look at the owl, the wise old owl is, you know, how many licks did it get to? Well, just three, you know, 1, 2, crunch.
I don't know what that is. Is that a commercial?
It's a commercial, all right?
I missed it.
I grew up on that.
I missed it.
Okay. It's like, to me, what's the 1, 2 crunch? How do we get into the center of somebody where they feel secure enough to be genuinely them? And it's not a performance base. It's like, you don't have to agree with me. You don't have to think the way I do. Your favorite color doesn't have to be one of my favorite colors. But can you relate to someone where what you're gifting the relationship with is a sense of security? Because then I think you get the gift back of the real them. That's my little, you know, Tootsie Pop theory of people.
Well, I think what this has to undergird is you have to be in, and I think probably most worldly environments are like this, you have to be in an environment where agreement with a majority is essential to maintain a relationship. That if you disagree with me, my relationship with you is compromised. That's what it's got to be. And if there was a really loving environment that said, listen, I don't care. I mean, I like to do that when I travel, hang out with a room full of strangers even, and there may even be strangers to each other, is let's just say everything is fair to talk about. That we can talk about your doubts, your struggles, your fears, you can ask questions, you can disagree with Wayne. It doesn't matter. If we're not going to have an honest environment where people can, then it's not an environment in which people are going to grow. It's just an environment where we're going to underscore our particular bents and our agendas, and where we're going to try and suck up to Wayne because he's the author from out of town, so everybody wants to be nice to him. And I don't really want you to be mean to me.
No.
But can we be open and honest in a way that says, hey, I really want to ask this question. I know it may sound stupid. And isn't that what everybody worries? I'm afraid it's going to sound stupid to everybody
everyone
else.
Everyone does worry, which is why they don't ask the questions.
And that's why people don't pray in public oftentimes. I heard all the time, I don't think I pray well. I'm not very eloquent. And like eloquence is important to God. Like, that's his main thing. No, wasn't eloquent. Not listening today. It does get into this environment of placating the social crowd. And it's not even, I need to do something positive. It's, I don't want to do anything negative. I don't want to do anything that turns the crowd against me. And so I complicitly go along with things I don't really go along with. And I think there's where the roots of, particularly in a conformity-based system, which most religious systems are, incredibly conformity-based, that begins then that spiral of silence where people are, okay, I'm going along because I should. And why, in particularly some of the situations I came from, if anybody asks the wrong questions, just for asking a question, you get marginalized as one of those rebellious people that just can't go along with what God has revealed to me.
See,
and it becomes deadly to them.
Yeah,
and people
even
know it.
I don't even think it's just religious environments. I'd have to say it's predominant across the board.
Yep.
I think the only time I experienced this not being the case is when someone has worked really hard to set up the public environment according to different rules.
Yep.
I think this is the norm.
Yep,
and unless someone does something to establish that, no, that we're going to do this differently, you don't get it.
Well, most environments are conformity-based. If it's a business enterprise, you're trying to get this stuff done. If you're a political group, you're trying to drive an agenda and get people to come along with that agenda, and religious groups are no different from that. But hopefully the community of brothers and sisters, and I even wonder how much that plays into people who find the podcast for the first time. Not Ricky we read about last week, but saying, this is scaring me to death. But people who go, wow, I finally found somebody saying it. Is it part of this? I've now found a community that I can be accepted in, feeling like I feel. And how much of that still goes back to the approval-disapproval need?
Yeah, just because we're saying stuff doesn't mean that that's good and right and that you should be here.
I love that when people tell me, gosh, I found your website and I knew in the first place I wasn't nuts. And I always say, unless we both are.
Yeah.
You don't know that I'm not nuts. I'm just saying stuff as I
we're just in agreement there, buddy.
Yeah. We're not in agreement about everything. We see things differently. So far, we've not allowed that to affect the relationship, which I think is wonderful. But when I read the spiral of silence, I immediately think of this is what happened in Galatia. This is what happened when a group of people moved in on this young community of folks Paul taught to live in freedom and life and love and relationship. And all of a sudden they imposed this conformity system, this Judaistic circumcision, whatever. And Paul said the reason they did it was so that they could boast in your flesh. They wanted to be able to say, well, look at the Galatians. They're really doing it right. They've gotten everybody circumcised. They're observing these festivals. They're doing it right.
And the guys doing that are wanting to be able to take credit for the fruit?
Yeah. They want to boast in the people's flesh, right. The outside edge. So when Paul writes them and he gets ready to kind of unmask this, I like what he says at the very beginning when he says, do you think I speak this strongly in order to manipulate crowds or curry favor with God or get popular applause? If my goal was popularity, I wouldn't bother being Christ's slave. He says, living by truth, having a heart that focuses on truth really means you're going to sometimes be the one in the room that says, hold it a minute, And then what happens in so many, like my story I told about my dad, you get marginalized. You get swallowed up in the whole, no, everybody else is going to lie now, going to back down. I thought that's so true of so many groups I've been in. If people were just honest around here, a lot of what's happening wouldn't keep happening. It happens because people have learned to deny what they really feel
and
in the desire to be accepted.
And I think the reason people do it is not because, well, I just got to get along. It's just, I think they end up going like, you know what? It's too much work to try to change a bunch of these. I think it's sometimes they don't care. The reason they're not saying anything is it's not worth it. My being the voice that is different than everyone else, it just is not worth the hassle of voicing that.
I don't have that filter.
No, I
don't think you do either. I just think it's funny you know about it.
No, that's what you see.
I agree with you.
I think it's not just the fear of, oh, no, they won't like me. It's the fact that, no, they feel the freedom to just go, I'm going to disengage because that's just too much work. It's not, I don't think I'll get a hearing. I don't think, and so people just step back, and it's kind of like.
And in some environments, that's actually true. To be contrarian here will do them no good and you no good.
I'm not going to call everyone swine, but there is don't throw your pearls before swine. And I do end up going, that is an application.
I think it is. Okay? I agree with you. Yep.
Where it's like, you know, swinehood. No, it's like not trying to call people, you know, pigs. It's just, you know what?
Pigs don't know what to do with pearls. That's the point.
Yes.
They just don't know.
Yeah.
They'll eat them. And as I understand it, pearls will kill pigs. If you put pearls in a pig's stomach, it will kill them.
So this is safety. I didn't know that.
That's what I heard, yeah. And I thought, that makes sense. It's not Jesus saying, okay, everybody's a pig and I'm not telling you the truth. It's not a pejorative. He's saying if you give pearls to pigs, they will eat them and die.
Most people apply that not as safety for the pigs, but as a pejorative.
And I have too on many occasions. I get that.
No, but I think the biggest challenge is, why is it that our culture, almost all the environments, why are they conformity-based? I mean, honestly, I'm sitting here going like...
Because they're driven by an agenda. Somebody's got an agenda. Make money. Be successful doing what we do. This is what we do. I'm the leader. I think that's just how human enterprise works.
Really?
I do. Do you know where it doesn't?
No, I'm asking the genuine question. I'm thinking through this going like, no, I'm not aware of the spiral of silence. And it's like, what environments don't have this dynamic? And then it's, why is it so ubiquitous when you're just going like, gosh, most people are not like waving a flag saying, hi, I am the agenda maker, and therefore you should all conform to me. They don't say that.
I think CEO says that for them. It does. Whether it's pastor, CEO, president, congressman, it says, you know, and there's those
guy in charge says get along or get out. That's the dynamic. Cause
that's often the message.
Because I look at some of the best run environments where they actually achieve some fruitfulness of stuff. They really are the exception where you have created a space for people to just give real, honest, great feedback, and people share and listen, and then they make decisions based on truth.
Yeah, those are precious few, and not even the most successful ones. I'm reading Jobs' biography, the whole Isaacson's biography of Steve Jobs, and how he ran Apple, absolute tyrant, belittle people, would steal other people's ideas, belittle them in public, steal them as his own a week later. I look at that and go, okay, and they built some great products. I have Apple products all over my office here. Built some great products, products that have helped me do a lot of what I do. But when you realize that, it was a tyrant that took to make that work. Did it? I don't know.
See, I wasn't there.
By the way.
I thought you were talking about Job. I'm going like, Job.
No. You didn't read Job's biography?
Isn't it Jobs? I'm sorry.
Oh, it is probably Jobs. Yeah.
like
I know a man named
Steve Jobs.
Sorry. By the way,
to
follow up a previous discussion, totally parenthetical, out of context, Mike McCarthy, Green Bay Packer coach. I was lamenting coaches and what it takes to be champions. And do I
yes.
still? He would. Somebody asked him this week if they were going to give the team, because they play Christmas night. And it's always, you know, in football, the team goes to a hotel the night before, stays together, so they get them all ready, working on the team thing before you get to game day. Is the team going to be in a hotel on Christmas Eve? And he said, no, it's more important that our people be with their families on Christmas Eve and Christmas morning. So we will not be in a hotel this week. We give them all the time to be off that time, be with their families, and then we'll bring them back later in the day because family is always more important than football. Wow. I like that in view of what I said about the Packers a couple weeks ago. I like it. Anyway, parenthetical. Back to the story. I was going to stay in my spiral of silence and not mention it, but...
There are some things you're passionate about. The Packers is obviously one of them.
It is.
Yeah, that's awesome.
I enjoy it.
Very good.
Particularly with the winning. It's not so much fun. But even when
Did you get any cheeseheads yet? Has that aired?
No. Oh, it's aired. No one sent me anything. Thank God no one's even mentioned it. going back to the spiral of silence, though, I think that's when we have a community of people that really embrace truth above getting along. I think that's the encouragement Paul's giving, even the Galatians. Again, the fix on the other side is for freedom that Christ has set you free. He's encouraging an environment in which, now don't use your freedom to as an occasion for the flesh, but even if you do, still for freedom that Christ has set you free, only an environment where people are really free to agree or disagree, not be marginalized relationally if they disagree, to be loved in the struggle, in the challenge, in the, that's the environment. When that happens, this is why I love this whole spiral of silence thing, be able to think through the emperor's new clothes and that whole story, was when a group I'm meeting with, not, you know, when I'm the lecturer in a conference, that's dynamic doesn't happen. But when I'm 25 people in a living room somewhere, and it finally gets through people's senses that they don't have to agree with me. They don't have to agree with the room. We're going to try and create the environment here where you get to see what you see, notice what you notice, disagree with what you disagree with, be honest, be open, share, ask the question, no stupid questions here. When people finally buy into that environment, that's the best educational environment ever. It's the best place for community to flounder. My love for you doesn't depend on you agreeing with me. It just doesn't.
Without that, you don't get reality. You just don't. You get someone's best foot forward performing for you, and you have no idea what they're really feeling.
Yeah, and if you come into this room where they're tasting all the wine, you go, hey, what's the best wine?
Vinegar!
You're going to get the vinegary wine, and everybody in the room is going to swear, and you don't know what's in the other two bottles, because you just came in and got the best wine. And even if one guy's saying, oh, please, that one tastes like vinegar, garbage, and everybody's going, you're a moron, because we tasted it, it's great, it's the best there is. Can you imagine how convoluted life becomes when people play this game of silence? It may be helpful in a business enterprise. It is a disaster in human relationships.
I don't even think it's helpful in a business enterprise. It might be helpful for the guy who wants everyone to do X.
To do his way, yeah.
But it isn't helpful because, it's not building on reality. I mean, I think the sad reality is that can be what happens in church where it's like, hey, is there a value for being critical? No, there isn't.
A question.
Yeah, but
I've had people kicked out for asking a question.
I know that. But it's like, it's not about being critical. It's about, hey, how is it that we find life together? That is a totally valid question. And if someone's sitting here and you're saying, hey, the goal is what? For us to rate this performance or for us to share life? If somebody over here is here and they're not experiencing life, shouldn't we as that community care about that?
Yeah.
Wouldn't that be an important thing to find out as well? Well, you know, you just got to stop being so critical. It's like, it's not about being critical. It's about what's not transacting inside them that they find a way to connect with this. That might be a problem in them, but shouldn't we care about that enough to love it?
Him or her?
Yeah.
No, I agree wholeheartedly.
I just go like, golly, what?
But what these researchers are saying, the spiral of silence is so compelling in a social network that people will intentionally go against what they know to be true so that other people won't look at them negatively. That's sad to me. That's just,
it is.
Oh my God.
Sorry to throw you under the bus.
Oh, but that's, I think, why we get the very dysfunctional, both business environments and other things that we get, and why people who are creative thinkers inside somebody's already web has to get outside that to flourish, because we're not going to let it, our whole thing here is about conformity, and if you're not getting in line with the way we want to do it, and it teaches you to be less than human, because it teaches you not to be honest with what you really see and feel inside, even if no one else gets it.
So, you're in a situation like this. How do you figure out what to do?
With the wine?
No, go for the vinegar, buddy.
I don't like wine anyway, so they all taste like vinegar to me.
I'm not talking about wine tasting. Yeah. I'm talking about
in an environment
if this is the bulk of the environments that people are in, whether religious, business, or even just a family structure, when you're feeling and thinking different, how do you work through a sense of, okay, what do I do? Do I go contrarian? I mean, do I feed my pearls to the swine because they could die? I mean, I know there's not a principle, but in terms of if most of us find ourselves there, how do you break that? How do you open that up to a different way?
Well, I think we'll find the answer to that on the blog as some people write in and tell us. I'm not sure how you break it.
Breaking the spiral of silence.
Well, I think you have to break it internally. I think you've got to be genuine and honest about yourself and
right. Be
in situations where your biggest thing, I think if your approval needs are met inside the Father, then you can be in environments. And the really question is not, do I just be honest and blow over everybody?
Yeah,
if it's pearls before swine,
hand grenades.
Yeah, it's not worth doing. It's worth just saying, you know, this is not an environment I'm going to hang out in often. It's not. Are there other environments? Do I look for environments? And do I look in my relationships to set people free to disagree and see what they see and love them anyway? Hopefully that's what we're encouraged to do. But I really don't know from this how we break that. Some environments are worth it. I do speak up in some environments, and it's worth it, to be honest, even if it gets you marginalized. Other situations in family things, whatever, you're just going to be honest at Christmas about how you feel about everybody else in the family. I'm not thinking that's going to be helpful to them or you.
No, but I don't even know it's loving in that. I think the dynamic, I mean, my own thoughts there is, you know what, when the greatest value that we're pursuing in terms of where do I get my sense of validation, where do I get my sense of worth and being loved, if I'm getting that from God, then I don't believe I'm going to be as susceptible to this personally.
I agree.
And when I'm establishing that as the value of any group that I'm setting in, where I'm freeing people to obey their conscience and their communication with God. And some of them can't tell the difference. Some of them don't even know either. Okay? But when I still establish that sense of value of saying, hey, you know what? The issue is you need to be honest with what's going on inside.
Yeah.
That needs to be the greater value. And that's what we want to know what's going on.
Yeah. And also be aware that if you're going to do it, even when people told you in private, they agree with you. They're most likely not going to follow through on it when you're in that environment. And I've seen that happen.
Man, that tweaked me so bad.
Have you seen it, though?
Have you seen it?
Oh, yeah. I've lived it.
Brother, I'm sorry the bus hit you on the back of the head. Have I lived it? Yes.
But what's even worse is the people that shoved you out on the road jump in the bus as it goes by.
Oh, yeah, because if you're not on the bus, you could be roadkill.
You could be next.
So
yes.
It's out of their own safety.
Yes, absolutely.
I'm sorry, I had to do this. No, you didn't have to. You did.
Simply stated, out of a desire to avoid reprisal or isolation, people go along with what they think is the popular opinion, even if they object to that opinion personally.
See, I think that's the other thing. You can't have an environment that's different than this if there's reprisal for disagreement.
Yep.
If at the end of the day, there is some cost that is exacted on someone saying something that you don't agree with.
Yep.
Then that's the silencer right there. Because people are going like, I'm going to weigh that, and that's not worth it.
And then the reality is, if you're that kind of person who marginalized people who disagree with you, what you realize is everybody you're relating to around you is a shadow of their real self. You don't really know anyone. Because everyone's saying around you what they think you want to hear to be liked.
Yeah, or just to avoid the dynamics of reprisal. I mean, I think it's sort of like, I don't know that I can control this on another environment. I don't know. I mean, I guess if you're the CEO, you're the leader, you can at least encourage it. But the only thing I can do...
Your profits about end then.
Probably. I don't know.
Yeah.
I think the only thing I can do is I can live according to this set on my insides.
Yeah.
You know, I think if you have the expectation, if your justice meter is, no, but they didn't tell the truth, and then you're going to be really struggling, you're going to have a hard time on this planet. Because I do think this does govern quite a bit. If you can extend some grace to people, knowing that this is where most people are inside, they're insecure, they're afraid of reprisal, they're afraid of isolation.
Yep.
Knowing this will at least help you navigate a little better. And then where you can do that, in my mind, the Tootsie Pop gift of people is like, if you can put security around them where they don't have to have their defenses up, then I think you really do get to enjoy. There's no one I've met that if I've been able to be successful in loving them in a way they understand, that I don't get a great look at the beauty of what's inside. That's the thing that made me, you know, it's like, I got a bunch of quirky people and friends. I do. And I love them, and I get to enjoy something on the inside.
Yeah, because it does say, the two little statements here as we end, fear and threat of isolation are subconscious processes. It's subconscious. Yeah. It's not people saying, gosh, I'm afraid I'll be rejected, so I'm not going to be honest here. That's become a subconscious process because it's so prevalent in the culture. But it does say this is kind of encouraging, the spiral of silence only holds a sway over the public for a limited time. Eventually, the spiral of silence implodes of its own weight, and people come back to honesty and
truth. I think, you know, another way of saying that perhaps is that at the end of the day, reality does win.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's like you can fake yourself out for a long time, but at the end of the day, reality is not going to get escaped. It is going to establish itself, and I think for us, That should give us a sense of great hope, even when you look at how messed up the world could be. It's like, you know what? The devil may be in charge for now, but it is only for a season. The reality is we do have a king that started all of this, a good king, and it is going to win.
Particularly for those who seek to live in the truth and seek to be honest and seek to create environments for other people to be that and sometimes get marginalized or whatever. I remember going through one of the worst seasons of my life a number of years ago, and Gail Irwin, author of Jesus Style, I was on the phone with him, and he said, you know what, Wayne, when you're following Jesus, time and light are on your side.
Oh, that's good.
And I was writing someone this morning, going through a very tough time, through a marriage deal, and their kids are being marginalized against them, and their kids feel, you know, been lied to by the other partner in the marriage. It's a mess. And I wrote him back, I said, you know, I know it hurts, I know it hurts really bad right now, but to be honest with you, time and truth are on your side. In time, your kids will come to know the truth. Maybe not today. Maybe today there's all this kind of stuff going on, but truth, reality wins, truth wins out in the end. And I do think that's the hope in which I'm going to live through 2012 and see what happens.
Yeah, it's not the end of the world. I don't believe so.
2012?
Yeah.
Think we'll get through this whole year?
I do.
Okay.
I do.
You heard it here. First on the ground.
Yeah.
But if you're wrong, no one will care.
By visiting our website, thegodsjourney.com.